Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Dude, at the end of the day, you have to find ways to be better than guys.
I think technically they're better than we are.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 31, season one, our final one of the season, but title 24 presented by NBC Sports. I'm Ricky Carmichael alongside my co-host Ryan Villopoto. Thank you guys for tuning in today. Before we get going, as always, we got to thank United Motorsports, Quadlock Case, and Boxo USA. Thank you for your partnership and sponsorship for this first season, and hopefully you guys will be back for season two. But although this is the final episode of the season for us, we might pop in through the off season if there's some newsworthy stuff going on or if we have a special guest. So make sure you stay tuned to our socials and we will be on it. But stepping right in, RV, Motocross of Nations is always a fun one. One of the best events that I've ever been to, especially going to Arnay. You haven't been to, you never raced Arnay. But was there any anything that stood out to you? I mean, France, obviously super dominant from a points perspective, dude.
Yeah. No, it was like you said, we've both had the chance to get to race that race multiple times. And man, Arnay, like you said, I hadn't had a chance to race it, but I was obviously watching it, keeping up with the feeds and seeing what's going on. But man, I think the biggest thing that stood out is obviously the racing was really good. But man, I gotta say, I mean, they're claiming, right, 102,000 for spectators, and man, like Racer X Vital, all the media outlets that had went from here, from the U.S., obviously we all got to see it, and dude, was it absolutely off the chain.
Pumping, absolutely pumping. I mean, when I was there, let's see, that was 2005, I believe. Yep. Yeah, 2005. I mean, it was very, very similar. Now, I don't think it was as wild on qualifying day on Saturday, but dude, that place was absolutely roaring, and it's set up really nice, almost like a stadium. I mean, you've seen it. It's in that valley, and then it's just that whole wall on the other side of the track, and it's an epic track, as you know. I mean, dude, you raced over there. You know, I've only raced over there just for Motocross of Nations. I mean, the fans over there are so passionate. I mean, we got great fans in the stands or in the U.S. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, they're just. I mean, it is. They make a damn weekend out of it, dude. I mean, you got.
They do. It's almost a festival. You know, to me, it was a totally festival. All the smoke bombs, all the flags, all the air horns, the chainsaws, the people that were dressing up. I mean, it's like a little Burning Man almost.
Right. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Festival. You're 100% right. Yeah. No surprise to what you said. I mean, France just getting it done. Renault, Fabre, Vial, just an epic performance by the guys from a points perspective. They absolutely crushed it. And, you know, I don't know that it was because of their home country. I just think straight up that they had, you know, they're just the better overall team, you know, anyone. And that's not a slight towards the other riders. I mean, there's a slew of great riders, but their finishes were second to none, no doubt. It was cool to see. Like I said, I think they could have won on anyone's home turf. So, you know, I think that I didn't realize this. And did you know this, that Fabre, he had better overall finishes throughout the MXGP season than Prado did. I didn't I didn't realize that. I
mean, So like Federer started coming on really, really, really strong. And I believe it was like 6 or 7 rounds before the end. I want to say he went four in a row. And then maybe missed a round and then, you know, was able to, you know, win the last, you know, one or two. So literally he really was coming on strong towards the end of MXGP, of their season and series. And then obviously it segues right into MXON. And you know, like they have, it's a 3-man team, you know, as we all know, and especially us that have raced it, man, that the pressure that MXON brings and to the riders also, you know, the three riders that are on each one of these teams, like it's a heavy load from all these riders' standpoint, and especially Team France being in front of their home crowd in a crowd of that stature too. It brings a whole different set of elements and things that you have to think about while you're racing compared to just a standard MXGP or pro motocross or supercross.
I think that for sure, you know, there's added pressure for motocross of nations. There's no doubt about that. I do feel that the MXGP series riders, championship riders, have a slight advantage from, and we've talked about this, from how part forme goes and things you can do, cannot do, things you can do, completely different. They're able to ride different bikes. They don't have a production rule like we do here in the States, with the AMA. So, some differences there. I've never experienced it because I haven't raced MXGPs like you have. I just know the different rules. So I don't know what advantages comes with that. I don't know what disadvantages come with that. You'll be able to speak on that on your behalf way more than myself. Is it a massive difference from a bike perspective? Because we had a lot of questions from our followers about, you know, like, hey, you know,
Jump to that question, Ricky. I think we got a question in here about the bike specifically. Where was that one at? That is right here. I think it's the let's see, D Max Fox 4. Do you think it's fair that MXGP guys get to run anything they want when our guys have a production rule in the States and not enough time to test all the options the GP guys get? So that was the question that we got that got sent in from D-Max Fox 4.
D-Max Fox 4, let me interrupt you. Yep. You are the winner of the Quad Lock Question of the Week. So we appreciate your question. That is an awesome question. That's why you win. You know what the rules are. The protocol. Slide into our Title 24 Instagram DM. Curly will take care of you. He'll set you up with the guys at Quadlock. Quadlock will take it from there, and they will get you some swag. Remember, make sure you post about it. I'm sure that you will like it and enjoy it, and we appreciate you watching, tuning, listening, whatever you do. So great question. I've always wanted to know personally, and and you are the man to explain it. So take it away, RV.
Yeah, so my short stint that I had racing MXGPs, I think it was only 3 rounds. It was Qatar, Thailand, Qatar, Argentina, Thailand, and then Arco. I got hurt at Arco. But back to when I was racing there, so Kawasaki at the time, when I showed up, there wasn't any frame, anything different between my frame in the US and the frame that I was able to ride in MXGP. But now going back to that is I do know, for example, like Jason Anderson had, I was chatting with him before this couple of weeks ago. And, what was it? There was a race in Italy that he rode where he got landed on. It was Majora. Yeah. Yeah. You know, they had him riding a frame that was 8 millimeters longer, I think. Austrian brand Husqvarna. So they obviously he flew over, here's your platform to ride. Now he didn't have a lot of time to test, like he had mentioned, D-Max Fox Force mentioned, like, yeah, there's not a lot of time to test. So he rode it, not that it wasn't better or worse, but he wasn't comfortable with it. He said he had to go back to what he has the most seat time on. So back to that, does it help the Europeans that they don't have a homologation rule? It very well might, but it only helps if you have the seat time in the knowledge of the motorcycle. Like for us, we are much more prepared on our platforms that we race day in and day out over here in the US. So to throw those guys on a different motorcycle or a same motorcycle, but a little bit different chassis, I think doesn't do them any favors. We have to have lots of time to go over there and prep on those conditions because they're much different than what we have. So as for our Team USA and for myself, when I've gone over with Team USA, we have just as much of a shot at winning on a production motorcycle as those guys do with non-production.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I should say I agree with you what you're saying. The only difference I would say that I always remember or like I felt like there was a little bit of disadvantage from performance, but they were racing the same fuel. It was the fuel regulations and rules. That was really the only thing that I always felt like, oh, I wish that I had my, you know, my other, you know, my other fuel, you know, that we race with in the US because their fuel rules were different. But as far as like my bike and my bike setup goes, I know I didn't have a full factory and it's production base. I never felt like I was at a disadvantage, like if I was racing against Everts or whoever the hell it might have been at the time. I remember always going over there like Cairoli in 2005. It always seemed like the Yamahas had some sick new innovative parts and pieces on their bike. Sometime they're on the next year's bike model already. But I never felt like I was at a disadvantage other than the fuel. But that was the performance was down on the engine side compared to my US spec as far as engine. I didn't feel like I was behind in power against the other guys that I was racing with because they were under the same rules as far as
exactly
as far as fuel goes. So D-Max Fox 4, number one, I love the D. I think D-Max is a dude, that's a flex name. So yeah, congratulations on the quad lock question of the week, final one of the season. And like I said, we appreciate it. Quad lock, thanks for thank you for doing that. Great ideas. We appreciate you. But getting back to it, France, no surprise. I think, like I said, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I think they could have won on any home turf. But then we get to, let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Let's Monday morning quarterback it, brother.
Yep. Yeah. Team USA.
Team USA. It was tough. You know, we didn't announce our team till late. Multiple reasons why. Couldn't send last year's team over. Justin Cooper was already getting married. Nothing wrong with that. There you go. For those of you guys not watching, we are watching listening. We're playing a little replay of Team USA, Hampshire, AP, a little bit of Christian Craig here, just some B-roll cool stuff. But, you know, I appreciate those guys stepping up, basically volunteering to go and answering the bell when they were asked to represent the U.S.
I think we were under the gun when we started, right? We already knew that going in, and even going to their turf with the teams that I have had that I've been a part of in the past, pretty, you know, I think all four times that I went, we had a hell of a team every time we went, and it was still tough.
Did you only race it four times and you never lost?
Yep, I believe. Yeah, two times in England, and then we did St. John was my last time, and then Bud's Creek. So that four. So yeah, never lost.
You're freaking 4-0, brother.
4-0, buddy.
But
yeah,
you got the horsepower to talk. Then get after it, big dog.
Look, I said we didn't send, look, I'll be honest, we didn't send our A team to go represent, you know, and there was a lot of factors that came into play with that, like Justin Cooper getting married, Chase switching teams, Eli being hurt. It really wasn't, you know, we couldn't pick from the cream of the crop from us, right? So, you know, we had RJ, we had AP. You know, we had, you know, our guys step up, which was phenomenal to see, Christian Craig, but also it's a gnarly race. So I think they, you know, being that we ended up eighth, I think that we could have done better. I don't think we would have made podium, just being straight up, being honest. But I think we could have been anywhere
better than eighth.
Fourth at our best through eighth right there. So it was right there, you know, Look, Christian Craig off the couch, right? First race back. And as anybody knows, Yeah, like that is the hardest race to come back off the couch for Team USA and go and race against the best in the world on a dirt bike. That's a big call. So, can't take anything. I'm not going to be too hard on them because, like I said, it wasn't our A team, and we struggled, you know. So, but we had look, we showed up. We had our flag there and we represented. It wasn't what we wanted, and we'll give it hell next year.
They're better than what they're better. The box score isn't a reflection of the talent level. It's just, to your point, we went there with the best team that we could, or that was available to us. Listen, I'm sure if Justin Cooper, we took last year's defending champions, if they didn't have conflicts, I'm sure they would have more than happily have been there, but it didn't work out. There's always next year, and USA will have their glory. I'm gonna say this. I saw a little interview, and I want to get in the weeds with this. I want to cause some friction today with RJ, and he was talking about the track on qualifying day, and he goes down.
Mm-hmm. Dude, my qualifying crash, I kid you not, it didn't matter if I had four wheels or not. I was doing a 360. Like, it's just a track that we're racing on should not be like that. I'm not going to complain about the track because I know I'm going to get a lot of hate from the Euros, and even the riders are like, dude, you guys have it spoiled over there in the States. And it's like, I mean, we're not spoiled. We just have water in our tracks and it's tilled. Like, it's tilled farther than 2 inches deep.
I think the best riders in the world find a way to adapt to it. That track is narrow, super narrow from a racing perspective. This is we got a little clip here we're watching of Saturday's qualification race. RJ was in the lead. He lays it down on a looks like a flat little slippery right-handed sweeping corner going up to a face of a jump, making a couple mistakes there in the turn just before that little double. And then I don't really see how
it looks like he hit that patch right there, that shiny patch right there, Ricky, the guy for the ones that we're watching replay, and just lost the rear, man.
I mean, listen, dude,
look,
number one, I like track races narrow. I've been there. It's a super narrow track, a fun track. And RV, you and I were having this conversation. I think you would have loved it. It's one of those tracks where you can make up a lot of time. Now, it's gnarly, a lot of steep uphills, a lot of steep downhills, some great rut corners, some tight corners where you can get into the corner really hard, harder than your competition, come out of the corner harder and faster than your competition. Just there's a lot of elements rather than a fast, wide open, smooth track where everyone can go fast. I feel like from a technical standpoint, the guys would love racing on this type of track because there are so many options to, you know, do different things than your competitors. You know, it's like all the time, like, oh my gosh, a lot of times you hear people complain about, dude, there's nothing to separate the riders. Well, this is a perfect track for it, in my opinion. And he beat up the track a little bit. RJ did. And dude, at the end of the day, you have to find ways to be better than guys. I watch Ken Roczen do it. You watch Ken Roczen do it. You watch Jet Lawrence do it. France didn't have a problem. A lot of other guys from other countries didn't have a problem. You just got to figure it out.
Yeah, no, it's tough, right? Like I heard, I got to watch the comment, got to watch a video about it. You know, the one thing that I think is a little short-sighted on that is you got to remember these guys, you know, they go around the world and race essentially so many different conditions. And that's just one of them. Just like, you know, take all of our 11 outdoors that we have, pro motocross rounds, we have Hangtown, we have Southwick, we have Red Bud. Now, those are all three different tracks that I just mentioned with three different, you know, completely three different soil types. You know, the US, we see about three or four different types, and a lot of those are really similar too. You know, Hangtown, I can pull out as being a kind of a standalone. Southwick pull out because that's our only sand race, so that's a standalone. But guys, I only got to do four rounds of MXGP. So where I'm going with this is from Qatar to Argentina to Thailand and then to Arco de Trento. Drastically different soil conditions, track, narrow, just completely. So I think, you know, as a racer, as a, you know, coming from the US, you have to have an open mind and, you gotta, you're only give every, everybody's got to race it. And I feel like, you know, like ultimately I'm not going to say that they're better riders than they are, but I technically on different conditions from Lierup to Lommel to these different tracks, like I think technically they're better than we are. Yes. He said in the interview, like, oh, we're spoiled. Well, he goes, you know, in the interview, it said, oh, the Euros think we're spoiled, you know, but no, we just know how to put water and dirt, you know, and look, they basically live on a rock sheet over in Europe. Right. And, you know, like I just got back from Fox Hills in August and that used to be a GP track. And it's flint and blue groove and hard. Like it is a very unique track and that's what Europe has to offer. Yeah. And as Team USA, we have to be ready to get over there and
you gotta perform in all of them, dude.
Yeah, you got to perform at all of them. What happens next year when we're at Lommel again, or you know, Lierup comes back, or wherever?
I think we're going to Matterley. I think we're going.
Next year. Yeah, it is Matterley. It is Matterley. But let's bring up Matterley for example. That was one of my first races too, and first or second races, Matterley Basin, and I was young. We did win. Yep, yeah, we did win there. But man, it was we had a. James and Stefan raced very, very hard and close. James went down. I think both motos that he raced that day. Mm-hmm. But dude, it's just the tracks are completely different and we have to adapt and we have to show up and give it our best. It has nothing to do with the conditions. There's 42 of those dudes on there and they're all racing the same thing. So that's what we have to do as a team.
I remember when I went to St. John or St. Jean, whatever you call it. I think we went there in 2000, I think.
With, was that with Travis?
Yeah, that was with Rhino and
TP.
Yeah. Okay, yep. Hot, really hot that day. But to your point, it was like, dude, rocks everywhere. But it was fun. And all the other two guys adapted as well. And we were just as good, if not better than the rest. I mean, we didn't completely clean house, but we won the damn race. And we figured out a way to get it done to yep. your point. And, you know, there was nothing like that on the Pro Motocross Championship side of things. But I will say this, dude, and I've always thought this from day one throughout my time racing the Motocross of Nations. And I would love to know your opinion on this, RV, is I always thought and felt like when I went to the Motocross of Nations, those guys rose to a different level than maybe what they race like at a normal MXGP world championship race. I really truly believe that because I'm like, I'd be battling with some cat, right? And I'm like, who the hell is this guy? Like, I don't even know who he is, right? He was nowhere in the championship, but I feel like that's the case. And I go and I'm going to use this guy as an example because he was at the Pro Motocross. He is in Europe. He races in the US now. And that's Tom Vial. I feel like he rode better this past weekend than he rode at most of the races this year. Did good at a couple races for sure, but I expected him to put in better straight up because of his credentials. I expected him to ride a little more like he rode in race this weekend. I expected to see that more out of him through the Pro Motocross Championship. Now I've heard a couple things, and this goes to D-Max's quad lock question of the week. I heard that he always had thought that his MXGP bike was better than his US bike. That was because of the rules and regulations that the AMA has compared to MXGP. So I don't know. I feel like the Euro guys definitely ride a lot more on emotion than US guys, or at least in your my day, RV. Like, I mean, what do you think?
I 100% agree with that. And why I say and agree with that is like, you know, like we as US guys, yes, we have a lot of racing, but I attacked every Saturday like it was the last time, where I think when I go and watch, you know, MXGP on the tube, you know, and I'm watching, they're more methodical. It's more like car racing. It's like, hey, if I don't have it today, I just need to be on the box. You know, because it's such a long series that they have, and they travel so far to some of these things. They know they have a little more time under their belt. So I think to your point, MXON, it's only Sunday. It's not a series. It's put up and shut up right now today. And that's, I think, what you're, you know, pinpointing on with emotion and showing up. And in Team France, for example, I think most of my MXONs have been, France has been in the mix for the win, I think, pretty much every time I've raced. For me. So they have one hell of a team and racers every year that they show up. And what you said of showing up and riding on emotion, you know, not that we don't, but I think they show up at MXON better than they do a lot of times throughout the year. And maybe I'm way wrong.
No, that makes sense.
But I agree with that. It
used to piss me off, actually.
100%.
I'd be like, dude, why all of a sudden are you riding so hard now when you weren't even in the top five in the MXGP championship? You know, it's like the owl. Like, dude, if I'm Raj and I'm Ian Harrison, dude, I'm fired up. I'm like, why the hell aren't you riding like that in Pro Motocross Championship, dude?
Yep, like I got a Christophe Porcel, Sebastian Porcel, right? The older brother of Christophe. Same to your point, like not like good finishes, you know, top fives ish, you know, inside the top 10, you know, wrote like a phenomenal rider. But Matterly, for example, he raced James till the checkered flag. I mean, it was on, you know, like one of the motos they were going back and forth. It was when he was going for blood. And those are the things that I think that's kind of what we need to, you know, that's kind of how we need to show up. I mean, I know that's how I showed up. Like, I know we have a huge target on our back as US.
Yeah.
You know, you can't let that get into your head. You got to go out there and just leave it all out on the track, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. As we see these moto finishes from a lot of the top guys, a lot of guys had some mistakes, one good moto and then one mediocre moto. And that's what MX1's about, you know, is really making sure that moto that is our throwaway moto or whatever, you know, whatever rider we're throwing away, one of their motos, it's just, it just comes down to every position counts. I mean, that race is so important. Every point counts.
Yep. 100%. I'll tell you what though, dude, do you ever feel like if there's one team or country that every other country wants to beat, it's US.
100%.
I felt like that. I always felt like, dude.
And maybe France feels the same way, but you know, we're talking about it now. So
that's right. All right. Got to give some glory to Australia. Hell of a ride. I mean, for me,
Best finish yet.
Yeah, best finish yet. Great job by the Lawrence brothers and Dean Ferris. Hell of a job.
Off the couch too, right? Just so retired.
Everyone's going to be, I feel like after that first moto, Jet finish sixth in race one. Now, he fell the first moto. There we go. We're watching a replay. He fell down, and I want to be crystal clear when I talk about this. Okay, remember, now we were just talking about how well everyone rides at the Motocross of Nations. We feel it brings out the best in all these riders, which sadly, it shouldn't be that way. They should ride hard at all the races. But with how narrow this track races, you know, like, I think Jet did a hell of a job. He came back from way behind, got passed by all those dudes. And then, of course, for the second time, his final moto, he went out and did what he always does. Him and Kenny, you know what, they went, Kenny got, he got third. No, he got second. So they went 1-2. So, I mean, you know, a lot of people are going to be like, oh, you know, MXGP riders are better. But outside of Jet crashing, I mean, it is kind of a spitting image of what we saw the Pro Motocross Championship. You know, if we're going to play the game of who's better, you know, the Europe guys or USA guys or the US Championship guys. I don't know. Like, I hate having that debate, but this wasn't a surprise to me.
No, he rode well, right? I think with a little tip over, you know, in that moto, but. I, you know, coming, like you said, coming through the pack at a track like that. And
it's hard to do there.
It's very hard to do there with the added emotion with all these riders that they bring to the table, the extra speed they bring to the table. you know, because here's the thing, like if there's any race that you're, you know, because as you guys were looking at the, you know, anybody that watched it or clips on Instagram, anything like that with 100, you know, they're claiming 102,000 people there, like, buddy, the adrenaline, the emotion, you know, as for getting tired, I don't know if it can happen in a scenario like that. So Jet had his work cut out for him to come through the pack against some really intelligent and smart racers, because, you know, I'm going to use Red Bud, for example, compared to like Erne, like that, you know, like Red Bud, huge, wide open, big, lots of passing, you know, lots of traction, pretty much can motor somebody like Jet can pretty much motor around anybody he wants to. It doesn't take a lot of thought process and passing, but a place like Erne, you really have to be on your game in setting somebody up. And it might take two or three laps to set somebody up at a track like that, because of how narrow it is, because of traction issues, you know, just all of those things come into play. So now he rode a phenomenal race.
Let's go to a couple. And that leads me to my next one. Let's go to answer some fans here. Mickey's underscore D, since we're already talking about it, has Jet Lawrence proved he is the fastest in the world? What do you think?
I mean, look, guys, it's one race. We can't say he's the fastest in the world. I'm not going to say he's the fastest in the world. I think from a collective standpoint, from, you know, you take him from Supercross to motocross to, you know, all the different aspects of riding conditions, like he may be one of the best in the world right now, or is the best in the world right now. But as for a championship scenario, like, you know, I'm not going to sit out here and say like he's going to win an MXGP championship as easy as he won a pro motocross championship. Currently, I know we have a couple guys that were missing for outdoors. You know, I think that he was the best at that day, or, you know, France was the best that day, right? But I don't say he's the best in the world, because, dude, it's a lot. It was one Sunday. I think that, you know, to claim that, you know, you'd have to all be on an actual level playing field with a 17 race series, you know, and that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I think he is. I think he's proven it several times. I go back to, he fell that first moto, marched all the way up, finished respectively, hard to do, one of the hardest races of the season. And he went out there the second moto and backed it up. I mean, those were the best guys. I mean, the only other person that wasn't there, I mean, if Tomac was there and Sexton was there, that'd be great. So I don't know. I'm to the guy. Like, here's my thing, RV. I'm like, dude, he's earned the right for that, and I give him that respect. It's just like the defending champion going into Monster Energy Supercross next year. Okay, I am going to give Chase the credit that he deserves. He's defending champion. He owns that. So if you want to be the best in Supercross, you got to go out there and beat the dude. He's earned that right. So that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with Jet, dude. So we'll see.
Yep.
Before we switch gears, let's thank our sponsors one last time. We appreciate everyone at United Motorsports, unitedmotorsports.com. Fantastic company. Been saying it.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All season long. If you're in the Kentucky, Ohio area, they have 6 locations. Pop in there. pop in their store, Quad Lock Case, quadlockcase.com. Just epic product. Check it out. Phone cases, mounts, you name it, they got it. Chargers. And last but not least, Boxo USA, boxousa.com. The best tools in the business, awesome warranty program. And you want to talk about being, perfection and tools and, you know, the drawers and the memory foam and organization. Boxo's got you covered. And always remember for the promo code, but only for UnitedMotorsports.com and Boxo USA, the Title 24 promo code for 10% off is only going to work for Boxo and United Motorsports, not Quad Lock for this week. So we appreciate your support, and we will be back. Hopefully you guys will be back with us next year. So thank you very much. Kenny Roczen, dude. G_wine. He says, does Kenny carry momentum and resurgence into 2024? What do you think?
Honestly, I think Kenny is probably, I mean, I know we've seen Kenny at a lot of different stages in his career, highs and lows, but the last bit, you know, with Super Motocross and then MXON that we just saw, like, he's in pretty damn good form, man.
Yeah, he is.
You know, and I think somebody made a comment, is the only Suzuki on the line. Not that it's just funny to say that. Not that the bike's, you know, less superior than the rest.
Yeah.
We've seen the SMX phenomenal performances. Bike's good here. Same thing. But I got to give a shout out to AGP Suzuki. You know, yeah. Bringing on Kenny like that.
That's not easy to do, by the way.
No, it's not easy to do. And a rider at that caliber and a team at the caliber of where they were when they brought him on, is a huge undertaking for a team at the, of that, of like them, of that size and of that budget to put out these performances. And I'm going to say it again. I think Kenny might be at his best that he's been in a very long time.
Yeah. Overall, I will say I think he's in the best headspace that he's ever been in. I think the results prove that. I think that he does carry the momentum. I certainly do. Will be interesting to see if there's much improvement with the bike. And HEP has done a fabulous job. I know you have a great relationship with them, and they have massive kudos to them. Like I said, not easy to do. A rider, I know. I'm kind of regurgitating what you're saying, but a rider of Kenny's caliber. Yeah. There's a standard there, and they definitely have answered the bell. They got great crew over there. They stepped their crew up for sure. Great personnel. So, I think, Kenny's going to carry that. I think he carries the momentum in there because I mostly think it's from a mental standpoint. I really do. I don't think his bike's the best out there. I think it's good, but I don't think it's any better than any other bike. And I think it's straight upstairs of why he's doing good. He's in a good headspace. He loves what he's doing. I think it's going to be tough for him straight up. I do think that I think it's going to be hard to go 17 rounds in Supercross.
Yes.
11, 12 rounds pro motocross, and you got the playoffs, SMX playoffs, to stick with it that long. I think it's going to be challenging for him. And especially if something goes wrong, if things aren't 100% right, if there's anywhere that he needed to be better, that's where he probably should focus on. So, but yeah, I think he'll come out firing at the beginning like he always does. Dude, there's a little report, switching gears, about Prado. I heard that he's going to be in Cali and he's going to be riding the 450. If the 450 test evaluation goes good, that we would perhaps see him here racing in good old USA. In the SMX World Championship in 2025. Are you for this? What's your thoughts on it? How do you think the test will go? And do you think that he should just stay in Europe?
Yeah, I think every, as we see, if you can ride Supercross, that's the biggest question, right? We obviously know he can ride outdoors very, very, very well. If you're competitive in Supercross in the US, I think that's why you see a lot of guys like Kenny, like Tom Bial, the other French, Marvin Mousquin. You know, we've had a lot of international riders head this way because they can ride Supercross. And that is something that, you know, we're going to wait and see. I haven't seen personally, I haven't seen any videos or anything of him riding, Supercross, and riding. Let me make this very, very clear. Riding Supercross and is completely different than racing the pace that our guys race Supercross at.
That's right.
Good, you know, great, let's use LA Coliseum, like, you know, the speed that Jet, Kenny, Anderson, I think the top four or five were hitting that quad before a back across the start straight, like up onto that tabletop, you know, like those things right there, like that is a very, very critical spot of and technique, you know, like not to say he can't do it, but it's one thing to do jump the jumps and race the jumps and race the track. So my question is I haven't seen him. I don't know. I'm for him coming over here. I think the more we can add, the more international riders that we can add to our series over here only helps us, build a bigger program, because, you know, as we see, we have a fair amount of international, riders in our US series. And I think that brings, and makes it a bigger championship in the end. You know, it's not just US guys. We're getting a lot of the top, riders around the world that are competitive in Supercross. So that's if they're competitive in Supercross coming over here, which I love to see.
Oh yeah. 450 Supercross racing. It is definitely different than going out to the test track in Corona, wherever they're based out of, and riding. So yeah, that's, it'll be interesting. So that is for 450 Supercross. I hope it goes good. I hope he stays safe, super talented. I think for our series, it'd be cool if he could come over and do that. So let's hope that it goes good. Last question. Let's see here. Sean _Gill84 says biggest surprise of MXON 2023. For me, you know, I don't know that there really was a surprise straight up. There's nothing that really shocked me where I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe what happened. So, you know, I'm
going to say the shocking for me, shocking was, and I've seen it and I've been it and I've lived it myself. But 102,000 people, you know, like it gives me goosebumps even when you're seeing the video. I wasn't there personally, but you know, you get video, the POV footage of from the podium down the start straight where all the fans were, or even just shots and footage of up on the hillsides and everything like that. I think those are the goosebumps. Those are the surprising is not the word, because I know how the fans are. But that was amazing to see. That was some goosebump stuff.
Yeah, right? it's a spectacle for sure. That race is a spectacle. And if anyone, even the US like fans, if you guys ever have an opportunity to go there to Arnais, go there.
Race in Europe for MXO.
Well, what would you say would be a good, like another race that our US fans, if they had an opportunity to go to, I mean, you've been over there, where would you recommend that they go, save up and go?
I mean, where I ended up getting hurt, which was Arco de Trento, probably one of the most beautiful places I've been.
Really?
Track very, very kind of, I don't want to say similar to that, but massive mountainside cliffs literally right next to the track.
And where the hell is it?
Stuff you can base jump off of right next to the track. In this
Where?
So I want to say it's down south a little bit. I believe I'm trying to remember what airport we flew into. Maybe was it Milan? I don't know. It's Arco di Trento. Anybody that's sitting
is what country?
Italy. Oh, sorry. Yeah, it was Italy. Yep, it's okay, Italy.
Let's start there.
Yep, Italy. Yep. So yeah, really cool. I would, if you can get over to check out a European MXON. It's definitely something that it will be. That's a bucket list item for you. And if it's not, it should be.
Yeah. Make sure you plan to everyone watching or listening to Title 24. When you go to that race, make sure you plan on, you are going to sit in traffic for a while. So do not get in a hurry, but it is one of the most epic races that you could ever attend. switching gears back to the U.S. side, a little SMX talk. The video, raw footage of Monster Energy Supercross champ Chase Sexton. He has finally debuted on his Red Bull factory KTM machine. I know it's just video. Like, what'd you do? Like, you thought it looked pretty good on it.
Honestly, it didn't. Obviously, we all knew it was coming.
Yeah.
We all knew it was coming, but finally it's out. And my first initial thoughts were, you know, like, it just right off the cuff is, you know, like, it looked normal to me. So his stature on the motorcycle. Yeah. I know it was just a little bit, it was just practice footage and stuff. Like, he looks good. I know there's some teams and, you know, there's riders in the past that have switched. And you're like, ooh, I don't know. Like, looks, you know, I don't know. He looks funny or he looks weird or it's going to take me time to get used to. To me, when I saw Chase, the only thing that I might have to get used to is the number four. You know, when he runs it. Right. So, I'm excited to see, what Raj and Ian.
Yep. It's going to be fun.
Can develop out of him. And, cause we know he's got the speed, he's got the talent, he's got the fitness. Supercross championship to his name now. I think if anybody can pull the best out of Chase, it's going to be those guys. You've dealt with those two for a long, long time. I'm looking forward. I'm excited because I think
it's something he needed. Us to watch. It's something for us to watch. And we're like, okay, how's he going to do? I feel like if he had stayed at HRC Honda, we would kind of know, like, but it's
that. And look, you know, the air always gets stale at some point on certain teams. You know, I ran my team out and, you know, like meaning I ran my contract, like, and I retired there, but there's a lot of these things. Like I've said on this show multiple times, I wish I would have switched for that next goal and agenda and all those things that can be good from switching. And I feel like I see that. I feel like I'm hoping we see a different Chase, come around Anaheim 1.
Yeah. Brandon Zimmerman, his mechanic, left HRC to come with them. Not a surprise. I think that's a good play. I think that's a good play for not only Chase, but Smart for KTM. I'm glad that KTM let him do that. Did you hear that little sound bite that KTM released?
As a racer, you never focus on what's behind you.
Sexton is down and down hard.
He did not want it to end this way.
I certainly respect his
environment to be the change that he needs.
I'm Chase Sexton, and I'm forging the future.
I heard myself on there, and I never got a letter asking permission for them to use my name and likeness, so they'll be hearing from my legal team this week. Right?
Perfect.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, I got some bills to pay.
That's right.
You know what I mean? I want to up my studio game for season 2 for Title 24. Could use a few new little cool things. So, you guys will be hearing from me. Just a heads up. immediate response. Oh, dude. So this is that time of year, like boot camps, off-season prep starts for SMX. I think, I think we get going January 6th, I think, Anaheim, yep. I think somewhere around there. When you were with Eldon, when I was with Eldon, I feel like we always started our off season training camp around like Halloween. And then we would go to like December, like right around Christmas is when it would end. And we'd have like a 2 week, just normal, you know, regular season routine, before the season. Is that how yours was?
Yeah, it was about exactly. Yeah, Halloween was always kind of like a starting point or right before Halloween. And then, I think we'd have about anywhere from, depending on, you know, body, if we had old injuries or injuries, whatever, you know, whatever the scenario is, it's about a 4 to 6 week boot camp. And then you start laying it down, you know, like, I don't know, about a week to 14 days, you know, 2 weeks before Anaheim and just get back to kind of not, you know, being so tired and everything else. Because I think the biggest thing is everybody uses that word boot camp now. And it's, look, to put the body under the stress that we have to put it under for 32 races, you know, for an entire season. The boot camp, you definitely have to dig yourself into a trench and then build yourself back up. And I think the better you do that during the off season, the more longevity you have over the course of a whole entire season.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. So this is the time, hopefully everyone will stay healthy. So we have a full season coming in. Hey, that was cool seeing Eli's back on the bike.
Yeah,
so that was great. I saw that little vid that that he was back. Good to have Eli back on the machine. So it's going to be fun to see all these new seats and faces, all these riders changing. Dude, it's been a fun season. It's been a fun season. I'm thinking like if there's any riders that are upset with anything that we said and didn't like to hear our honesty, I'm always willing. I'm sure you're willing to have them like, dude, let's do a special edition. Come out here and tell us why we might be wrong or you think I'm wrong. Do you welcome that combo?
Oh yeah. Bring them on. You know, I think, hey, the thing is we're calling things as we see them. And if it's completely different, then I think it's on them to say otherwise.
That's right.
You know, and it's really hard to do that. I think it's hard to do that because, you know, we're no dummies. We can kind of see what happens and we can read between a lot of the lines too. You know, and if we're all way off in left field, we got title 24 right here, baby.
Bring it on.
Load it up on and let's get on and let's talk about it.
Bring it on. Bring it on, big boys. Well, again, thank you very much to United Motorsports, Quad Lock Case, and of course, Boxo. We appreciate you. All of our fans. Truly all season long. It's been a lot of fun. You know, when RV and I got this thing going and with the help of NBC Sports, you know, we were just kind of getting our feet wet. But hopefully that all of you guys have enjoyed our content. That's what it's all about. And, you know, RV and I love sharing our experiences with you guys. Fortunately for us, we've done a great job. We were very fortunate throughout our career and just want to, like I said, share our insight. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed it, whether you're watching, listening. We definitely will we'll be staying in touch throughout the break. Make sure you pop into the Title 24 Instagram. And, of course, follow RV, follow myself. We're all over social media. As always, we're on demand on Peacock. You can check out any episode that you would like there. It's on demand and always on the Motorsports on NBC's YouTube page. And then we are on all of the podcast applications, whichever one you guys listen to. We are on there. You know, make sure that you send comments, you like. And once again, we appreciate the support and we will be back for season two. We will keep you abreast. Anything else you want to say, brother?
No, I think that's good. Yeah, I think it was interesting, you know, like, or really cool that we were able to put this, you know, with Aaron Feldstein, our producer at NBC, and Curly, and our team.
Rich.
That we kind of threw this, yeah, and Rich, yeah, we threw this thing together. Kind of, well, I don't want to say last minute, but I got the call, and hey, we got this. We put it together in about a week. So, all the fans, listeners, you know, thank you for the support. Like Ricky said, this next season, I'm hoping to have my trophy room done, a better setup for cameras and audio and visual and all of that, and grow this thing to something that everybody that, you know, they know where to come listen and get all their info, and that's, you know, Title 24.
That's right. We'll be doing it live someday. So we appreciate you guys. That's it for season one, episode 31, Title 24. Like I said, follow us on the social medias. We'll be popping in and out while we're gearing up for season two. Thank you for all the support, everyone.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.